HPPodCraft.com.
Hello and welcome. I'm Chris Lackey.
And I am Chad Pfeiffer. This is the comments show for the H.P. Lovecraft Literary Podcast, in which we discuss your thoughts from yestermonth.
This is our June show, talking about comments from May.
We covered a bunch of stories from Fine Frights, an anthology edited by Ramsey Campbell, who came on the show this month. Mm-hmm. And, of course, we also talked about the movie Life Force, which was edited by a teenage boy, as far as I can tell. And along those lines, let's start with the first story of May, Child's Play.
Daniel Hernandez writes, as the old saying says, never trust a kid.
Is that the old saying? I never heard that one before.
Oh, yeah, it's classic.
I like this comment a lot. Carl Hikara writes, man, this story is disturbing. I think those kids are really messed up. I would never have done something like this as a kid. These kids are more concerned with getting in trouble than the fact they murdered another kid. Definitely the older brother is a psycho. I just felt like Carl and I were neighbors talking over the fence about the kids down the street or something. That comment just really felt good and gossipy to me. I was into it.
Oh,
yeah,
boy.
That older brother is a psycho.
We got lots of tales of listeners doing dumb, possibly life-threatening things as children.
Yeah, there were a lot of those. We can't include them all, but yeah, we're glad you all survived.
Yeah. The Toddling Chaos writes, when we were kids, we once tried competing to throw the biggest rock in the air, as in directly up. No casualties, fortunately.
Oh, my God.
Moonlight Dancer wrote, Chad's story about shooting the arrows reminds me of a time I got angry and threw a stick at my brother. I ended up sending him to the emergency ward because I cracked open his skull. Oh, my God.
That is not the comment I expected from someone named Moonflight Dancer.
Peter Larson writes, honestly, I wasn't sure the kids were necessarily mentally disturbed. When I think back on some of the things my brothers and I got up to, momentary fixation, lack of experience, and poor impulse control led to an awful lot of injuries. None fatal, but a few close calls with broken bones and bad cuts. This is heightened, but not necessarily mentally disturbed territory. Of course, the psychonarrative fits as well, so. What really stood out for me was when Chad's story of nearly killing a playmate didn't end with him saying that he stopped shooting arrows at people, since his takeaway was apparently that the problem was a childish lack of marksmanship ability. For all we know, Chad shoots a lot of arrows at people, just much more skillfully. He may, even now, be prowling Madison, looking for criminals, or even just ordinary people.
You know, man, that's a funny joke, but it's so true. I'm not running around shooting arrows at people, but the thing that I did regret was the lack of marksmanship. Because, like, even now, I'm not really ashamed that I tried to terrorize that kid. I'm only ashamed that I did it in a dangerous way that would have gotten me in trouble. I really still haven't learned any empathy. I just thought he had it coming. Illegal Structures writes, on a lighter note, is this the first story covered on the pod that involves actual pants peeing? I'm not sure.
Boy.
We've made that. It's a good one to throw out to the group. You know, maybe someone can re-listen to all 600 episodes. In the industry, we call that a pee pass. Just do a quick pee pass.
Hey, Eric S. Vallone, MD. He's back. He's written. He's been busy with this whole pandemic. He's a physician, obviously.
Yeah.
It's good to see him commenting again.
Paging Dr. Vallone.
I'm pretty sure I saw this on an episode of the old Alfred Hitchcock Presents from the 1950s or 60s. It was sponsored by Ivory Snow Detergent. And old Alf hawked it by saying, if the mom had used it, the boys never would have been in the papers.
As a child, I thought Alfred Hitchcock was the coolest, like the guy.
Oh, yeah.
I liked him as a character more than I cared even for the, you know, I just liked it when he showed up and made his bad jokes. It was awesome.
Yeah.
Sophia Lindstrom writes, the brothers, because they share parents' description at the start of the story, gave me the impression that the author was implying they were brothers only in the biological sense, incapable of forming the emotional attachment expected of brothers. Mm. Not sure if that was the author's actual intention, but I took it as foreshadowing of how emotionally detached the brothers were during what they did and how they reacted when things turned out bad for them. A very chilling tale that I really need to read for myself. Sadly, can't find an English version online, but my local library apparently has a copy of the collection that includes it in Danish, so I'm definitely borrowing that. Well, you have superpowers, Sophia, because you're just going to go ahead and read it in Danish. That's a funny thing. Oh, you have it in Danish? That's fine. Also, the original title, Blot and Drengestreg, probably reading that wrong, Drengestreg, being roughly just a boyish prank, is wonderfully on point and horrific. So that's the actual title of the story, not Child's Play, but just a boyish prank. And if you'll recall from the last comments show, this story is actually taught in some Danish schools.
Mm-hmm.
Elementary right. school.
Insane. Ben A. writes, you should all get an award for deciding to cover this one. I agree. Next to The Love Dead, this is one of the most disturbing tales you two have covered, though Notebook Found in a Deserted Home is also unsettling. To my knowledge, Ramsey Campbell is the only person to ever anthologize this story in English.
Yeah. I don't know. A lot of people had a hard time finding it.
Well, we had a hard time finding it. For us to work on a copy of it, did you actually physically take pictures of your book's page and convert that into text so that we could
could share it. Yeah, yeah.
However, lots of listeners stopped listening to this episode because of its disturbing content, and I don't blame you.
As we were saying, it's hard to find, and part of me wants it to be more available to people so that, you know, because it's such a good story, but at the same time, I don't want to disturb so many people. I feel conflicted about it.
Yeah.
Jeppe Mullick writes, oof, this story, I read it in Danish when I was a kid, maybe 12 years old or so, and this episode certainly brought back memories. As others have said, surely one of the most disturbing tales you've covered, but also a well-written and evocative piece of work. Sorensen is an excellent writer. There you go.
Carla Leo writes, oh God, so unsettling, but so good at the same time. It definitely reminded me of someone that I haven't thought of in many years. My mom also worked as a cleaning lady for a living and had some scary encounters with kids. There was one in particular, around 7 or 8 years old, that was extremely sheltered and had an IQ above average or something like that, and kept cornering my mom, saying he wanted to open her up to see how she worked inside. Oh my God. My mom brushed it off at first, but after a particular encounter where he was eyeing knives in a suspicious way while sitting at the kitchen she was cleaning, she decided to have a talk with his mom. It didn't end well because the mom took offense to what she said to her and fired her. A few months later, she had heard from one of her cleaning pals that started working at that house that she had to quit because the kid was now cornering people while holding a kitchen knife and was even hiding knives under his bed and pillow. I don't think he ever hurt anyone. As far as I remember, the lady had to give in and put him in some therapy. But this story definitely unlocked some crazy memories. Thank you so much for another great episode.
Jeez. Welcome to Chef, Scientist, or Serial Killer. I mean, that's like a Michael Myers origin story or something. Terrifying. Christopher D. Singles writes, oh, and I forgot to mention what a phenomenal reader Chad Fess is. To my ears, he's in Andrew Lehman's league. I hope he reads more for us in the future. Yeah, I definitely hope so as well, and I'm going to pass that comment along. I thought he did a great job. Chad's awesome. Episode 595, Lost Memory.
Darren Hennessy writes, one item that came up in this episode was that some Germans had started removing der and die from their nouns, instead are using das, which is gender neutral. I wanted to pass this along to a couple of friends who would be interested, but I couldn't find a link talking about it anywhere. Has anyone come across anything about this online? Thanks.
Yeah, there were a few people reacting to that. As far as I know, that was just one person you were talking to.
Yes, it is. Actually, I went online and was looking up about this. And there is, because, you know, so many words too, you put like a teacher is Lehrer, and Lehrerin is if it's a woman. So like so many, Schauspieler is an actor, Schauspielerin is an actress. So there's so much gender that's tied up into the language that it's very difficult to kind of untangle that. There are some people that are doing it. I don't know, the woman I was talking to at the cafe was English, who lived in Germany, in Berlin for like a year. So that was her take, and the people that she was hanging out with. That's all I know. I don't know if it was a real movement or anything like that.
Yeah, people were reacting to it like, what are you talking about? You can't do that. And other people going, actually, I think it'd be quite easy. And there was a little debate starting up, and it was like,
yes.
I chimed in and said, we don't know anything. It was just somebody said.
Something somebody said to me, exactly. And I'm no expert on it. I'm still learning German. I'm on day 155 on my Duolingo. Mm. I'm going to stick with it. I'm going to get in there and become a German speaker maybe in the next 5 years.
Speaking of three-digit numbers, Mark Simmons writes, after almost 600 episodes, I'm finally caught up and can comment on an episode in real time, just in time for the in-depth discussion of robot genders. I guess it makes sense that robots would embrace a binary construct.
See what he did there?
A binary construct.
Uh-huh. Get it?
Mark, that's awesome. That joke was awesome. I'm so glad you chimed in and you picked the right time to do it. He continues, but seriously, now that I've read the text version and admired the author's device of using phonetic spellings for the words and concepts that the robots don't understand, I note that the pronoun she, S-H-E-E, also falls into that category. My impression is that the robots have a concept of masculine gender using he rather than it for entities, quote, with the attributes of self-knowing, but they don't have a concept of feminine gender. Thus, she is spelled wrong. Sex, S-E-K-S, and neuter, K-N-E-W-T-E-R, are all equally alien terms that the narrator has to write phonetically.
Mm.
Woo! And I was like, yeah, that is it. That's really interesting to note that the author put that intent in there with the intentional misspellings to show the words that were alien.
Yeah.
That's really cool. I missed that.
I did too. Good job, Mark. DR writes, the robots thinking the body is insulation for the ship is similar to a story in a comic called Alpha Flight. I remember Alpha Flight.
Of course.
In issue 88, a character named Guardian explains that he was teleported to Jupiter after an explosion. He was found by aliens called the Quirrell, who kept him alive and tried to help him. He then says, unfortunately, they were not conversant in human physiology, and they misinterpreted my suit's mechanical equipment with my natural organic matter, creating a working synthesis of the two.
Wow.
Yeah.
Andrew M. Reichart writes, Chad, what's that closing track? It's Aces. I believe that for this one, I used a track from Black Destroyer, that episode, my general sci-fi track. At some point this year, I'm going to do a cleanup on the old music page, and I'm going to do that sooner rather than later because I want to release some more reading / gaming music as we go into the new show. I'd like to use some new stuff, so I'll be back at work on that. Keep a watch.
For those of you that enjoy Levi Nunez and Loot the Body, I just want to say his new role-playing game is out, called Skate Wizards.
Yeah, I've been seeing that all over social media. It looks so awesome.
It's great. I got my copy of it in the post because I was one of the play testers with him, and it's just it's just rad. And it comes with a cassette tape with songs just for the role-playing game, and I think that is so rad.
Oh, the whole package looks so cool. I've seen it all laid out. Good job, Levi.
That gets us in at 596, The Horror at Chilton Castle.
Sweating to the Great Oldies writes, came for the wet cap pickup / fiction, stayed for the crone sucking bones in a tomb. That old saying. A lot of old cliches on the show today.
It took me, when I read that at first, I go, huh? And I go, oh, there's that whole bit about the guy throwing his cap down so that the guy would pick it up. And
yeah, who knows what it was some good. Weird thing I got off on.
Steve wrote, can you win by eating the witch first?
That's a really good question. I would want to be that ancestor, you know, like the first one in your family to go to college. I'm going to challenge. Why have we all been doing this the same way? I'm going to be the first one to try and eat the witch. I'll get her.
And then Rafe Ball writes, only if she's a sandwich.
Zing!
Oh, God bless you,
Rafe. I love it. Michelle Elbert writes, I forgot what platform I was on and tried to angry react to Rafe's comment. Yeah, that's true. You can't have a dad joke like that without the appropriate reaction. Because the thing about jokes that are that bad is standing there and being proud of yourself for a minute. That makes everybody mad. That's why it's so awesome.
Jonathan Alvis writes, I'm pretty certain that this story is a distillation of the various legends surrounding Glamis Castle in Scotland, considered to be many as the most haunted castle in the UK. Although the current stewards of the castle really downplay its spooky history, the legends are so well known that there's even a Wikipedia entry for them. Chief among them is that there is a secret sealed chamber containing either an immortal witch / vampire woman, the bodies of rival Scottish clan, or a hideously deformed monster, possibly the true family heir. The secret of whatever the chamber contains is only known by the Earl of Strathmore and allegedly passed down to his male heir upon reaching adulthood. Claude Bowes-Lyon, the 13th Earl of Strathmore, is famously quoted as saying, if you could even guess the nature of this castle's secret, you would get down on your knees and thank God it was not yours. Oh, wow.
I'd be like, whatever, Claude, I don't even believe in God. Show me the secret. If it's a witch, I'll eat her. That's how I'd be. H.R. Price writes, in retrospect, the smear of red on her mouth was probably blood from the newest corpse. But when it was described, my first thought was, it's wearing lipstick? That's a pretty clumsy way to telegraph that it's a female monster. That's pretty funny, man. Turns out the clumsiness was in me all along. H.R. Price writes.
Sanjay Mathew writes, factor, in the sense of an agent responsible for handling business, was also a term used beyond Scotland. In the 18th century, colonial trading posts in India were referred to as factories, since the East India Company would conduct trade in these demarcated zones under the supervision of a factor.
Oh, that's interesting. You know, I just watched the movie The Letter with Betty Davis, which is an awesome William Wyler movie, and that takes place in a rubber factory in Singapore, but it's just sort of a big estate. So I was thinking, why are they calling this a factory? In the sense that I know it, it's a big, you know, sort of industrial building.
Yeah.
But now I understand it. Wadams writes, I enjoyed, or W. Adams, I'm not sure exactly how to say that. Wadams writes, I enjoyed the anecdote about Brits telling Chris about their holidays in Florida. Most of us seem to have an embarrassing pathological need to impress Americans. On the flip side, the protagonist of this story reminded me of every American tourist I've ever met. You can often find them in country pubs boring the barman with stories about how they trace their ancestry back to the local nobility. That's awesome. Mm-hmm. And so true. There's a successful subgenre of low-budget films on Netflix which cater to the wish-fulfillment fantasy of Americans finding out they're the long-forgotten heir to a European monarchy. In a lot of ways, this story was like a darker version of The Princess Diaries. That's totally true. Everybody who's that into their lineage eventually tells you they're Mary, you know,
yeah,
Mary Queen of Scots is their
something like that.
Or something like that, yeah.
The movie I think he's forgetting is King Ralph.
King Ralph, of course, yeah.
Which is, that's all about that. It's epic. Ethan Cordry writes, surprised you guys didn't discuss parallels between this story and H.P. Lovecraft's The Rats in the Walls. American visits England, gets involved in the ancient dwelling place of his aristocratic ancestors, goes down to the basement, finds something bad. There's a more specific parallel, too, with the Delaporte secret passed down between fathers and sons.
That's right.
Both stories, of course, are employing the same classic gothic trope of discovery of historical ancestral guilt. It's interesting that in both cases, the evil is specifically related to the family status in the British nobility. From an American perspective, perhaps there's an uneasiness about being too closely connected to the old world corruption of the noble class. After all, for white Anglo-Saxon Americans, they wouldn't be Americans unless someone in their lineage had decided that Britain sucked enough to make them run away to America.
Yeah, it's two sides of the same coin in those comments of whether Americans relate to not being ruled or whether they would prefer to be ruled, you know?
Yeah.
I'm here to tell you that we're the beneficiaries of Enlightenment thinking, but I have a feeling that the people in this country would be easily ruled.
Yeah. Well.
Like I said when we were covering that last story, the Pharaoh's disdain for the common people is infectious. whoa, stairs!
And that gets us to the comments. 49, two Cthulhus and a Kadath. Ben A. writes, Chris and Chad, as manimal aficionados and lovers of all camp, I will buy you both copies of Friday the 13th, the series, if aww, only so you can again see the awful tour de force that is season one. Brain Drain is the episode with the cursed trepanator, but there are so many goodies to behold.
That's awesome to have a sugar daddy who just sends you Friday the 13th, the series DVDs.
I'll give you my address. I didn't know that it was even on DVD. That could be attained. I'm excited.
I'll take any Friday the 13th, the merchandise, or, you know. Paula Wyke writes, H. Russell Wakefield has your evil beard story. Old man's beard does exactly what it says on the tin.
Ooh.
Speaking of British and American differences, that's not a saying here on the tin. You've popped that out a few times.
I'm did. Like, that's an English
where'd
thing.
You learn that from?
Here. I live here.
Do you know? Oh, no, I know that. I did some quick math on where you learned that from. It took me a minute to, is that something unique to you? Or is that a Britishism? And then I heard it. I suddenly was hearing it more.
Yeah.
You know how that happens. Mm-hmm. Do you know spoopy?
Spoopy?
Yeah. When something's, you know, cutified, kind of scary. Have you heard that word before?
No, I haven't heard that.
That's a
one.
New one to me. I wondered if that was a Madisonian thing for a minute because there's this, we were walking around the neighborhood and there's a little garden with a ton of like kooky ghosts and Godzillas in it and stuff. And it says spoopy garden and you can follow it on Instagram.
Oh.
And then I heard somebody saying it in conversation.
So it's like
I looked
spooky.
It up. Yeah, internet slang from, I don't know how recent, but, you know, I think it might have started with a sign that made a spelling mistake or something, but it's specifically things that should be spooky, but they're not. They're kind of cute or whatever.
Yeah.
And it's got the word poop in it, so it's that kind of thing. Anyway, you learn something new every day.
You do.
Hayden Orr writes, hey, you sons of Shoggoths, first-time commenter here. I found the show about a year ago and have absolutely loved it ever since. You guys have helped me get through some rough times since then, and I just wanted to say I appreciate you guys for doing the show.
Hmm.
I've listened to the whole catalog twice now, and I gotta say Frankenstein is probably my favorite story y'all have covered, but I'm probably biased on that because he's my favorite monster, and it's my favorite book. Keep up the great work, you two.
Aw, thanks, Hayden.
Thanks, Hayden. I really appreciate it. And I love some Frankenstein.
I reel at the fact that you've listened to our whole 600 episodes twice. It's shocking to me.
Yeah.
But beautiful.
Prepare to be shocked. That's more shocking than Child's Play, really.
Yeah, it is. That gets us to episode 597, The Necromancer. Steve writes, I wonder what happened to those Puritans, the 80,000 or so who fled when James I and Charles I were king. I guess they ended up somewhere and made a glorious home for themselves where all is shiny and happy and Christmas has been banished forever.
Wait a minute, Steve. Max Olson writes, I've been lucky enough for the past few years to teach a weird fiction course at my college, Ooh. And I've definitely used your pod as inspiration for some of the stories we studied.
Yes.
So belated thanks for that. Read between the lines there. Basically, Max is saying that he beats his students with a switch.
Oh, geez.
Because that's what I was advocating for.
Wow.
If you use the pod for inspiration, you're admitting to it.
I didn't get that from it, but now that you pointed out, it's obvious that's what he means.
It's there all the time.
Michelle Albert writes, Christtide has big Freedom Fries energy.
It does.
It does, yeah. Fun story. I did a summer session at Trinity College in Cambridge. A few of us got a sneaky peek at the school's collection of silver, including the pen used by the new fellows to sign their names to the register when they got the title.
Cool.
The guy who was showing us this said that Trinity College had the best and oldest collection of silver. The fancy bowls, flatware, cups, and candlesticks you brought out for the fancy banquets in addition to the pen. He said this was because that when Effin Cromwell showed up, he sent a couple of lawyers around to confiscate all the silver from all the schools of Cambridge to melt down for making coins or whatever. However, Trinity College was a law school, so the guys sent by Cromwell fudged the numbers and Trinity College got to keep most of their silver.
That's cool. Yeah. They were more allegiant to the tradition of law than they were to Cromwell.
Yeah.
Lawyers as good guys, who knew? Drix writes, I can actually confirm that the podcast already has some collegiate merit. A few years back when I was a freshman in college, I was taking a creative writing class. One of our assignments was to find a short story, deconstruct it, and try to figure out how the effect of the story was pulled off. Naturally, I wanted to explore writing weird fiction and selected Ambrose Bierce's The Spook House. Mm. I believe I cited the podcast as a source, or at least it got my juices flowing for it. I think I managed an A as well. So it's time to start switching. Methinks, see? On board with switching.
Joshua Allen Docht writes, this show is definitely worth some college credits. I've been listening since the original run of Lovecraft Story episodes, and the hundreds of hours of absorbed audio has given insight into weird fiction of a depth and breadth equal to any subject I've studied in grad school. That knowledge has even gone on to practical use as I make my living writing for video games, tabletop role-playing games, and fiction.
Cool.
Thank you, Professor Pfeiffer and Professor Lackey. It would be an honor to be banned from the forbidden section of your school library by you.
Get Doach out of here. Bam! Cut me a switch.
Morgan Tudball writes, why did English society ever stop associating mathematicians with necromancers? I can't think of a better way to recruit more nerds into the math scene than promising them dark and forbidden powers to unleash a can of necromantic whoop-ass on their bullies.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Think of all the metalheads that would have gotten math degrees if they thought they could make those Iron Maiden shirts real. James Holloway writes, is it Cambridge Supernatural stuff time? Oh boy. You mentioned the severed head of Oliver Cromwell being displayed to warn people who conspired against the king. This is what happens to my enemies. They die of old age in their beds, surrounded by their toadies and flatterers. But this story doesn't end there. The head passed from owner to owner for a while after that before fetching up at another Cambridge college, Cromwell's alma mater, Sidney Sussex College. It is buried in an undisclosed location somewhere in the college. Whoa. And legend has it that the college is haunted by the ghost of the skull.
Just the skull.
I know. That means there's just a skull flying around. What can it really do? You know, Del Close, the famous Chicago improviser, he donated his skull to the Steppenwolf to be used in any productions of Hamlet.
Oh, my God.
So, his skull became a prop.
Can you do that?
He did do that,
Wow.
Yeah, that's if you see Hamlet in Chicago, you're likely looking at Del Close's skull.
Cthulhu's Dream writes, so I was wondering, with the patron shoutouts, either they're chosen at random or y'all are like years and years behind, LOL. I've been a subscriber since and before the switch to Patreon, and I had honestly thought I had just missed my name all those years ago.
No, it's both of those things. They're chosen at random and we are years and years behind.
Yes.
In fact, there's probably some people we're thanking who've jumped off the show and aren't even hearing that.
That's true. No,
thanks, those sons of bitches. I'll get them back. I'll get them all back.
What?
Wait. Bonus 43, Life Force. Andy O'Dowd writes, as mentioned on IG, I love this movie and I will defend it to my dying breath. One of the frequent complaints is about the pacing, but for me, it feels like three episodes of something like Doctor Who running continuously for one movie length. Each segment is a self-contained story, the arrival, the chase, and the showdown.
Yeah.
Interesting. Now, Thomas Painter writes, I've always thought that the middle stretch of Life Force, where they try to track a female vampire via hypnosis and so forth, was like something from a different movie and represented an effort to touch certain bases with the audience, as if the pitch was like, it's a mix of Alien Invasion and Dawn of the Dead with some Exorcist-style possession stuff, too. Exorcist may not be quite right, but it's like they were imitating a certain kind of psychic investigation movie to rope in those fans, regardless of whether it fit with the rest of their story or not. That's really good insight from both of those comments. Yeah. I think that type of episodic thing is happening. And I do think, now that I look at the era, yeah, they were trying to do the Exorcist kind of deal. Mm. That's why that was there.
Evan writes, unrelated to the content of this episode, but important question anyway, any chance of a Patreon watch-along for Chad's movie? I know Prime has a watch function that Critroll used for their Vox Machia show. I've only ever gotten to watch a movie with someone who helped make it once, and it was great. This wouldn't be in person, but it could be a lot of fun if this is an option. Just a thought if it fits your guys' schedules.
So, well, that came and went, but it wouldn't have been any fun for you because I just would have been so surly on something like that. Plus, it's a very slow movie, so I don't know if a watch party would be much fun. Well, we could talk about it more in the bonus episode,
yeah.
But yeah, I would have been just complaining about things the whole time. Not the movie itself.
We could have a watch party. That's not, it doesn't have to be something with the premiere. It could just be watch a movie and then, you know, you make comments and stuff. And
well, right,
it's not available here in the UK yet, so obviously
no, it will be available at some, but it's been sold to that territory, so it will come out in the UK, I believe, eventually. But let's talk about that more on the bonus episode, because I have such complicated feelings about that movie and stuff, and it has been something that's come up on the show a few times, so I wouldn't mind talking about it. Ethan Cordray writes, I've never seen this movie, but I tried to read The Space Vampires once after finding it in the thrift shop and being hooked by the title. What a title. I know, I love it. I say tried to read because I gave up after the astronaut protagonist, who was, the book made quite clear, happily married, sleeps with the secretary of the main scientist, after which the scientist explains that he's obviously an anti-vampire who's sexually irresistible to women but who makes their life force better by banging them. It was around that point that I began to suspect that Colin Wilson was much more interested in something else other than vampires. Something, shall we say, very 1970s.
Yeah, well.
Yeah.
Jim Cannon writes, The Masters of the Universe is surprisingly solid. Not a great adaptation of the property, but apparently the director was a big fan of Jack Kirby's Fourth World and used that as a way to justify the budget restraints of setting the movie on Earth. I know you guys are Marvel guys and probably not all that familiar with Orion, Darkseid, Boom Tubes, and the Anti-Life Equation, but there are lots of parallels with the Masters of the Universe film, even if the director was just saying that stuff after the fact.
Yeah. I weirdly am conversant with boom tubes.
Oh, yeah.
And all that kind of business. Yeah.
You can't not be. I mean, I'm not as deep into it as I am with Marvel, because that's the stuff I read. But people were still talking about all that. And there was lots of DC. Was it DC Superpowers? Those toys that came out?
Yep.
Yeah, they were really cool, and they had a lot of dark side stuff in there.
I read a bunch of that stuff. You know what, though, was really weird about that Masters of the Universe was how He-Man could make people's life force better by banging them. I thought that choice was really weird. Just keeps coming up in films. Steve writes, there are shades of Quatermass, too, in Wilson's story, and probably even Doctor Who, which are touchstones for British science fiction. I read the book first in French, and it's a bit different and less graphic than the film, but most of Wilson's fiction involves what I would call wish-fulfillment sex, and put me off reading much more of his work.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Shoggoth Lord writes, crap, I probably should have commented this in the lead-up to the episode, but for those in the U.S., Life Force is currently streaming for free on Tubi.
There you go.
That's where I tried to watch it initially, but then I didn't like the commercial, so I rented it.
Eric Schroka writes, kind of apropos of nothing, but now that Kate Bush is trending again, maybe it's time for Chris to really... maybe it's time for Chris to release his version of Wuthering Heights.
I was thinking about, since we are rebranding, it would be good to get some press, so maybe a lawsuit could bring some positive attention to the show.
Wait a minute.
If Kate... Yeah, let's get Kate Bush to sue you. Not the show, you, personally.
I'd like to think there are other ways that we can get some attention. And I don't really want the ire of Kate Bush. Her kindness is equal in depth to her venom.
You won me over. Wow. That was a poem.
I know.
That was beautiful. If you set that to music and called it Kate Bush, I think the fans would like it.
It's kind of crazy to me because I was listening to an interview with her. She's talking recently. And she said that she watched Stranger Things before they ever asked to put her song on. So she knew the show. Her kids watched it. And they were into it. So it's kind of weird for me to think that this sort of 80s retro Lovecraftian D&D kind of thing was like, Kate Bush is like, oh yeah, that's my jam.
Well, of course it's her jam. She lived, that's what her life is like, I assume. I assume that Kate Bush is confronting weird, ultra-dimensional elements of darkness all the time. I just kind of know that about her.
Yeah.
By the way, I'm a big advocate for the song Hammer Horror by Kate Bush. I really like that one. I don't hear people talking about that one much.
No. But go watch the Babushka video and you'll see that she is ultimately a fantasist, a role-playing game enthusiast.
Yeah.
That she plays a lot of different characters in that and they're all pretty amazing.
I'm glad about this resurgence.
Oh, yeah.
I think it's cool. Hopefully it doesn't get shoved down your throat so much that it hurts her. Because sometimes that happens, you know. People get too eager.
Well, that concludes our comments for the month of May being given to you in the month of June.
Yeah, and, you know, we'll be doing another one next month. So it was so funny. I posted, we have been so cautious about this name change. And then I posted the show and said this, you know, we bring this show to an end, the H.P. Lovecraft Flurry podcast to an end. And the first comment was, wait, this show is ending? It's over? It's the first comment. So the person didn't listen. I don't mean to go negative on a commenter, but that just made me laugh so hard. It was within like 5 minutes of the post.
We've been trying to be so careful not let anybody think that we were stopping making shows. We're not doing that. We're just changing the name. We're going to refocus a little bit, just a tad in another direction.
This was like we were treating this with the caution of a child in a divorce. You know? It's going to be a little bit of a transition, buddy.
But it's going to be better. Everybody's going to be much happier this
way. Yeah, you're still going to have your space, but then we'll slowly get you used to dad's one-bedroom apartment. Boy, this just got sad. Why? How dare I make fun of this?
Everything's going to be the same. You're a Patreon subscriber. You're listening to us. You're going to listen to us next month.
Yeah, next month it'll be another comment show, buddy. Don't worry about it. And don't tell mom about what you hear in dad's bedroom at night. That's daddy's business.
Yeah, if daddy's crying, just for daddy. Okay.
That's all we have for this comments episode. Tune in for bonus tracks later this week.
It's coming up.
Just in a few days, guys. Oh my God.
Just end it.
I'm Chad Pfeiffer.
I'm Chris Lackey. And this episode is over.
HPPodcraft.com.